Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this chilly, cool, cold January 24th COVID era edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College Radio online radio station is plugged in to our community. Well, today we hope to have a great show for you in which you're going to be able to be on the soapbox and engage for a good block of time. We're going to be talking, do part two. Last week we were not able to get all of our guests on, so we're going to do part two of MLK's Revolution of Values, and we're going to do that with Pastor Mike McBride, who is the executive director of the Live Free campaign, and Philip Agnew. Some of you may recall him from the bays of the Dream Defenders back in the last election, sitting in Florida and whatever, one of the most brilliant young minds, young leaders that we have on the set today. He's an organization. Black Men Bill will be joining us for the conversation. So they'll be joining us momentarily for a lively, provocative, and informative conversation. But first up, before we go on, let me just thank everyone who donated last week for the Tower Fund. Even though we had a truncated program in that we wanted to go 2 hours, only went one, it was well received. And we thank those who made their donations. I think the program was actually rebroadcast and well received, and we want to say that we thank you who did donate, and you can still donate to the Tower Fund. So don't feel as if you missed your opportunity last week. You can do so today. You can do so by actually going to 212-209-2950, and my assumption is that you can still get our Vantage Point MLK Agenda Pack, the 5-CD set that we put out last week. Any contribution of $25 or more will get you that 5-CD pack, because we really, really want to get the information out. But we really, really want to support the Tower Fund, the Tower Fund. And you can also go to towerfund.wbai as well, towerfundwbai.org as well. Finally, I just want to say that we want to continue to, at least for me, the minimum is mask up. Mask up as a minimum is my slogan. Debating about to take the vaccine or not take the vaccine, we can have that debate. But can we just mask up to just in case you might have COVID, don't spare it to anyone else, or, it's an added protection that you don't get it as well. But most importantly, spreading it to someone else. You know, the question of shared values is very important to me. So I'm really distressed that this has become such a weaponized issue. But at the human level, can we just protect the seniors and protect our children? Mask up. Mask up at a minimum. Well, we also today, when we do open the phones up, we're going to open the phones, and we want to get your perspective on this crisis of gun violence that is erupting. Our guests will talk about it too, but we are specifically going to ask you, first of all, to react to your sense of Martin Luther King vision today, his revolution of values that we talked about. But Eric Adams is the new mayor, of course, of New York City. He came to office promising to crack down on violence and to get things in order. And of course, unfortunately, in this city, we just had a police officer who was killed. Another fighting for his life. And the question is, does Eric Adams have it right? Is his approach right? If so, why? If not, what do you prescribe? We want to really open the phones and get your perspectives on this. This is a major issue. It's very painful. It's very harmful in terms of people's sense of public safety and law enforcement. And yet, there are real questions as to whether or not we'll be facing a kind of counter-revolution, what I would call a quality of life broken windows theory, Giuliani type counter-revolution out there, trying to bring back some of the draconian means that were used, that we fought so hard, many people, to put under control. So anyway, we want you to be thinking about that, and we'll hopefully have a lively conversation, getting our audience's opinions on that particular question. But again, our major conversation for today, is an extension of the conversation last week, Martin Luther King's Revolution of Values, Part 2. And we focused on his speech at Riverside Church, in which he made these remarks. He said, "We as a nation must undergo a rapid revolution of values. We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers and profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. True compassion," he said, "is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It is not haphazard and superficial. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death." That was Martin Luther King. That's the quote we've been dealing with and talking about and discussing. Joining us for this discussion of the revolution of values and other topics related to the same are Pastor Michael McBride. He is the executive director of the Live Free campaign. He hails from Oakland, California / Berkeley, where one of our sister stations is located, by the way. In fact, his office is right around the corner from my sister station on the Pacifica, because I actually visited it while I was visiting with him on one of those occasions. And also Philip Agnew, who is, as I said before, some may recall from the days with Dream Defenders, but now an organization called Black Men Build is the organization that he is with now. So we want to welcome Pastor Michael McBride. Pastor Mike, welcome.
Good afternoon. Great to be with you, Dr. Daniels.
All right. And Philip Agnew, welcome.
Good afternoon. I feel very welcome. I'm glad to be here, glad to be with Reverend Mike and you, Dr. Daniels.
Well, we could, man, this is a dream team as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we could really, really get into a really, really deep conversation. I want to just quickly, by way of introduction, though, Pastor Mike, if you would just give people some background on the Live Free campaign and its mission, the mission of the Live Free campaign.
So the Live Free campaign, and Live Free Network, as we call it now, is the national network of people who are committed to being peacemakers in our communities. We take very seriously that violence in all of its many forms visits Black and brown and poor communities too often, and disproportionately through the kind of issue of gun violence, interpersonal violence, conflicts that rise to lethal violence between community members. Also taking very seriously state violence and extrajudicial killings that take place by law enforcement, the over-criminalization of our communities, and then just generally largely systemic violence that blocks access for our folks to have the right to vote, have access to livable wages, and, all the basic human rights that are afforded to us by our Creator. So we take very seriously that in order to win and defeat these conditions, we have to organize both people and institutions that serve Black and brown folks in large numbers. And so those are faith congregations, street organizations, strategic community-based organizations, et cetera, all across the country. We're in about 25 to 30 cities and about 14 states. And, glad to be in relationship with you, Dr. Gammons. You are an important concierge.
All right. Okay. And Philip Agnew, Black Men Build. That sounds interesting.
Yes,
what are we supposed to be building, brother? What's the vision? What's the mission?
Keep it simple. Black Men Build's goal is to transform black men and to transform the communities that we're in. we started our organization in 2020, really with the realization that black men in a real way needed to be engaged in the political processes. And I know we've seen for years, we've been there, we've been at the meetings, we've been at the conferences, we've been at the marches. There's always sisters, there's always people who are leading on the front line. But we need more of our brothers. We're losing brothers. We're vanishing from our schools. We're vanishing from our homes. We're vanishing from the workplaces. And, you know, black men need to be engaged at the same level as all of the other people in the black community. And so we set about building an organization for black men to come in. We know we need some work. We need to be transformed in the way that we think and the way that we move. We also need to be way more politically engaged than we've been. And so that's the goal of Black Men Build. Not to put black men above any other group, but to make sure that black men are doing their part in every possible way to make sure that black people get free. So that's the organization. We've got chapters now in 7 places around the country and building 7 more chapters this year. And I'm here in Miami where we have a chapter, and we've got one in St. Louis, Brother Tef Poe. We've got one in Atlanta. We've got one in Milwaukee and Detroit, Columbus, Ohio, and in New York City. And soon we'll be in Los Angeles. We'll be in Chicago. I'm going to forget now. We're going to be in Baltimore. We'll be back in Houston. We'll be back in New Orleans. So I'm excited about being here with you and linking up and being a real partner with Live Free throughout the work that they're doing over the next few years, and excited for this conversation.
Right. Sounds great. And I really think this is a very crucial work. And I remember the launch and certainly wanted to sign off on it, be a part of it, and eager to continue to do so. Let's just begin with your perspectives on the quotation that we are working around. Of course, you know, I argue that that the political establishment and white nationalists and whole bunches of folk want to have us bow down to or accept what I call a milquetoast Martin. But Martin Luther King was not about milquetoast. Martin Luther King was, we can argue, a revolutionary, actually, in some ways, but certainly he outlined a perspective in his speech at Riverside Church, and he talked about this revolution of value. So I just want to begin with each of you, starting with you, Pastor Mike. Just what's your perspective on where we are in achieving Martin Luther King's revolution of values?
Well, I think we're far away from it. I think we are arguably living in one of the most difficult times of our lifetime, my lifetime. I'm 46 years old, so I'm a child of the mostly 80s and 90s. And I think Dr. King's message has been hollowed out and hijacked by the very people that, if he were alive today, would literally incarcerate him, and if they could get away with it, kill him once again. You know, people love to talk about Dr. King, but I just think it's important to remember Dr. King was such a threat to this country. He was constantly harassed, investigated by the FBI. His approval rating was at an all-time low with black folks when he died, much less talking about white folks. And so, you know, people hate living revolutionaries but love dead heroes. And so I think it's important when Dr. King's birthday comes around that we don't allow his legacy to be hollowed out and embraced by the very people who would literally kill him. And we can't control who celebrates Dr. King, but we can make sure there is a real amplification of his values. And he says things that should make us uncomfortable to this day, that include that the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. He talks about the triples of evil, racism, militarism, and poverty, economic exploitation, capitalism. And so we ought to keep these messages alive, and we ought to, I think, model our moral framework around organizing along not just him alone, but those who carry that best tradition of the black liberation struggle and human rights struggle in this country and across the world.
Philip Agnew, a lot of people have seen you and witnessed you and, dare I say, have made some comparisons to the young Martin Luther King, because you are, you know, a very, you know, powerful visionary and an incredible and I mean that in the most positive sense and in the best tradition of the black community, you know, orator, you know, prophetically speaking truth to power. So how do you see this whole question of where we are in achieving MLK's revolution of values?
I agree with a lot of what Dr. Reverend Mike said. You know, first, I'm humbled by that comparison. I think I'm far from it, of course, but I think that as I look over this quote and as I've been looking and really pondering it, you know, he talked about prophetic. He talked about a thing-oriented society. And, you know, one thing I marvel at that we're witnessing now almost more than ever, and these are unprecedented times in a lot of ways, is how much people are fascinated with things. You know, we are actually in an era, Doctor, you said you were a Luddite a little bit, you know, with Google calendars and things. But we're in an era where people are now purchasing property, purchasing land, purchasing clothing in the online world. We're now talking about capitalism has now not only destroyed the vestiges of humanity in this actual real world that we're living in, but now people have become fascinated with the virtual world. Now people are fascinated with the intergalactic world. And so when Dr. King was speaking about these things, and you ask how far close are we to reaching this revolution of values, I think we're farther than ever, because we've now entered into an era of Martin Luther King Day is celebrated by the NBA. It's celebrated by Nike. It's celebrated with sales on Amazon and sales in stores. And we've completely forgot about this revolutionary who talked against the Vietnam War, who railed against the Reverend McBride said, capital and capitalism and materialism. And so from where I stand, I think we're farther than ever. And we've got to be aware, even us older folks. I'm 36. I'm not as young as I was when I was first moving around. Now we've got to be more aware that capitalism has entered into our minds, our psyches, and really is now entered into a virtual sphere. And so we've got to be prepared to fight capitalism in these triplets in every domain, here in the real world, in the virtual world, in the metaverse, as they talk about. I know it sounds crazy, but more and more of our young people are finding a home there. And also beyond the stars, where the wealthiest in this country are now seeking to have refuge and move when they've done destroying this world.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network, and the program is Vantage Point. The host is Dr. Ron Daniels. Our special guests are the Reverend Dr. Michael McBride, Pastor Mike, we affectionately call him, and, of course, Philip Agnew are talking to us today about King's revolution of values, how far, how close, and the times we live in. And so I'd like to just shift, and let me just say parenthetically, one of the things I like about King is, and I confess that coming up as a, you know, a Pan-Africanist, a black nationalist, and, you know, full of myself in many regards, you know, I mean, I didn't dislike Martin Luther King, loved him, but I just thought, well, Martin Luther King, we were Malcolm, you know what I mean? It took me a while to actually study, and that's why study is so important. In fact, Malcolm X said of all of our studies, he said, history is most qualified to reward all research. Study is important. When I started studying, I said, what? He said, true compassion is more, paraphrasing him, than flinging a coin at a beggar. He said, it comes to recognize that the edifice that produces beggars needs restructuring. Well, man, that's revolutionary. He's talking about this capitalist political economy, which is one of the reasons he was killed, because he was at least a democratic socialist by all accounts, you know, so that's why these conversations are important, because there's a way in which the system, if you even go to the monument, you don't see any of the more revolutionary radical quotes from King. You see, you know, and it's not that we're not for, you know, getting along and, you know, that kind of stuff. But those quotes that really talk about creating a safe way and a just way for getting along are often missing. Let me just shift now to the conversation that really I think is really pertinent to both of the organizations you're working with and the collaboration between them. And that is, you know, our community is racked with trauma and pain because of gun violence and violence and fratricide, if you will. And I'm wondering, Pastor Mike and both you, Phil, if you would just talk to us about the roots of gun violence and your perspective about what must be done. And Pastor Mike, you already began to talk about that some, but I think it's worthwhile sort of digging into this a little more deeply in that regard.
Well, you know, I have spent much of my life working, you know, with black young people, black and brown young folks in the Bay Area primarily. I went to Duke for graduate school, so even when I was in North Carolina and Raleigh and Durham, you know, I got a chance to hang out and, you know, befriend and fall in love with, you know, young black folks there as well. And our experience is the same everywhere. We are the least attended to group of folk in this country, particularly if you're living at the intersection of poverty and disinvestment from institutions, you know, and I mean that intentionally. Like, black churches, unfortunately, are not always a safe haven for a lot of these young folks who are caught up in these cycles. Certainly schools aren't, you know, the labor force and the workforce are not the only institution that regularly engages young people who are caught in these kind of cycles and conditions are law enforcement agencies and the criminal justice system. Those systems inherently are violent. And so what we teach young people at a very early age is that if they feel unsafe, that the only real way to achieve safety is to use violence. Some of it is called legitimate violence, and I believe that is the systems of law enforcement and the carceral system. And then some of it is illegitimate violence, and that may be the use of knives, sticks, guns, and et cetera. I have found, particularly over the last decade, that we have been able to intervene and interrupt that violence through very strategic interventions. Less than 1% of a city's population can drive as much as 60% of the violence. And so, you know, if you have a toothache, you don't take all the teeth out of your mouth. You target that one tooth that's been giving you problems, and you try to first save the tooth. And if you can't save the tooth, then you, you know, take another, you know, more extreme step. And we have found that when we try to save these, you know, loved ones caught in these conditions, many of them are willing to be saved if the salvation being offered to them is as concrete as the violence that they face daily. But trauma has become unleashed at a magnitude that we've never seen with COVID. And so what we've seen with COVID is the persistence of violence that they had already endured, and then a level of medical misinformation and other forms of violence through this pandemic that has literally stripped away lots of their matriarchal, patriarchal, intergenerational infrastructure. Lots of self-medication, lots of desperation. Folks are robbing folks together and then turn on each other and rob one another after they rob somebody else. And these conflicts escalate and on and on and on. And so I think my request to all of us who are concerned about violence is not to be as simple-minded as you are when you think about King, right? Like, right, you know, right. You can turn King into Kool-Aid and drink it and it won't do anything to you but give you diabetes, right? I want to suggest that we should be as curious about violence in our communities. Why are people caught in such forms of desperation? What are the conflicts that we can intervene? How do we scale the resources that are coming down so we can actually provide healing spaces that are systemic and structural and comprehensive? Those are the conversations I hope black electeds, faith leaders, even law enforcement folks, everyone talking about public safety must become more curious about why violence is happening, not just talking about how we stop the violence.
Mm. Amen. The Pastor Mike, the bad brother, yeah. Andy Brother Phil. I hate to ask you to come behind that, Brother Phil, but you got to come behind that with your perspective too, my brother.
Listen, it's already been said. You got to know when the message has already been given, but, you know,
come on, Phil. You slid me them notes last night, brother.
He already laid it out. I think for us as a community, we get locked into this pathologizing language because we're the victims and in many cases, some cases, the perpetrators of this violence. You know, most violence happens to people in proximity to you. And so black people are not predisposed to murdering and robbing and maiming other black people and raping and beating other black people. You commit these things when you're in proximity to other people. And we always in these conversations are pointing the fingers at one another. And I think what Dr. King did, what Reverend Mike is doing, is pointing the finger appropriately at a culture and a system that creates these conditions. We aren't born this way. We always say this within Black Men Built. We aren't born this way. These are the conditions that we've been raised and built and developed in. When you strip human beings of everything that they need, you know, in some cases and in some neighborhoods, the conditions that people are living in are worse than cave people. At least cave people at some point could leave out of that cave. They could go with their little brick and they could go or their little stone and they can go and hunt. And they can go bring something home and they can have some fire and they can have some heat and they can know where they're going to be and live the next day. And that isn't even the condition for hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Black people, Latino people in this country. They wake up not knowing how they're going to put food on their table, if they're going to have a roof over their head, if their things are going to be there when they get back. And so when you live in this level of precarity and you live in a society that teaches you every day, as Reverend Mike said, that the only way that you're going to get what you need and what you have is by taking it from somebody else, by power, by domination, by conquest, by exploitation. Then if you're raised up in that every single day, of course you're going to have the conditions that so many people are living under. And then you have the police who benefit every single day, who benefit in their budget from murder. They are in the murder business. They aren't just killing Black people. They aren't just arresting Black people. They are financing the entirety of police departments based on the violence that this capitalist, this patriarchal, this hate system that we've grown up in perpetuates. And so when you talk about, as Reverend Mike said, the sources, the reason for this violence, you've always got to point the finger appropriately at a country that creates what in all essences are inhuman people, inhuman tendencies based on a scarcity, while so few live in abundance and live, as I said, looking towards the moon for where they're going to go next.
Mm. All right.
And, you know,
okay.
can I just say one more thing real quick, Doc?
Sure,
you know,
quick,
like
sure.
When we talk like this, I often hear a lot of Black people and Christians saying, but, you know, Pastor Mike, you know, it's not like you're making excuses for people. You know, like we literally are watching little babies get caught in the crossfire. We're watching, mm-hmm. you know, grandmothers not able to walk outside on their own porch. And it's like you just making an excuse. And I'm trying to communicate to people, I am not making an excuse. But if you mm-hmm. have the wrong analysis, if you can't define the problem, then how do you create a solution that actually solves the problem?
Right.
It has been at least 25 years since we've been having a conversation where I've been a part of how to address gun violence. And at every stage, political leaders always say, we don't have the time to do what you're suggesting to do because we have to stop the violence now. And I do believe that time is our enemy. The longer we wait, the more we give the regressive forces of this country more fodder to bring back a 1990s tough on crime approach that we know has failed us, has caused as much damage as any other institution except for slavery in this country has done to Black people. And so Black people, it is in our interest to become more curious about this issue and to define the problem correctly than to do reactionary responses by politicians who are so far from the actual root causes of violence, and they themselves don't have the imagination. One would also argue the political courage to actually spend the time and their own capital needed to solve these problems. It is up to us to force them to do what we know works, and that is public health approaches, that is going block by block, investing, mentoring, building the Black Men Build programs, building the Live Free programs, building these kind of institutions that can hold the worst conditions of our communities with love and generosity and compassion.
Well, that segues nicely into my final question, and that is the current political climate that we're in many different ways. I mean, it is mind-boggling, to be honest, to be in a scenario where, you know, white nationalists and white supremacists and neo-Nazis and, are really have become normalized. And though, you know, I don't rate President Obama as the greatest president of all time, I often just make a couple of comparisons, one of which has already been made with Obama first. I mean, if President Obama did 5% of what Agent Orange and the Orange Man and you know, if he had Make America Black Again forces, I mean, he would be like run out of this country. I mean, it would be no question about it. Or just the, you know, the issue of, you know, a woman who shows up at a Board of Education meeting the other day, and whether you're for or against masking is sort of beside the point. But what she said was, you know, you ain't putting no mask on my child. Y'all, you may have seen this clip, because I'll show up with every gun I have. What if a black woman had said that? I mean, goodness, I mean, this would have been all, I mean, it hardly made the news. It would have been the news, and the right wing would have been all over it. So it's the weaponization of these issues, and of course, the outright threat to democracy in a way that I've never seen. So I guess I'd like to just close with your perspectives of the state of democracy and the state of where we are in the political realm, beginning with you, Pastor Mike. And I'm going to reverse it and go with Brother Phil first, because Brother Phil was out there trying to rescue some folks and trying to bring some sanity to the political process. So I'm going to start with him.
I live in Florida, man. That's not a place where we think of sanity when we think of politics. But the conditions right now, you know, George Jackson said, you know, some 40 years ago, you know, fascism was already here. And his analysis and many of the analytical points I share, fascism is already here. Fascism has been here in the United States, and it wasn't welcomed and ushered in by Donald Trump. We're just better at it than other countries. We just like to hide it under a veneer better than other countries. So really, the state of democracy, I think people talk about it being in crisis. I think it's been in crisis in our life support ever since the beginning. This is barely a democratic country. We have little to no political choice and variation between the two parties. We see both parties, and we like to blame Sinema. We like to blame Manchin. But really, both of these parties, right, are in cahoots in ensuring that we don't have a fully democratic country where every person who is here has the right to a say in their state, their city, their federal government. And so I think the state of democracy is dismal, is absolutely dismal. And as always, the only people who have been trying to force this country to be the country that it said it wanted to be and purported itself to be have been black people. Black women have always been acknowledged as a very strong base of support for some of the parties. But at writ large, black people, Latino people who have been fighting for citizenship have been at the forefront quite often in making sure that this country has some sort of democracy. But it's sad right now. And now more than ever, all the political discourse has moved farther to the right. You know, even some people that we once considered leftists or progressives or radicals are now just spouting neoliberal jargon and crap every single day that they go out to the mic. And so we've got a lot of work to do. I don't know if it means having more of our folks run for office, wink, wink, to some of the people on the line. I don't know if it means a third party, but I think it's everything by any means necessary to kind of steal some Malcolm X parlance right there, that in this democratic process to actually save it and make it what it could be, because it's never been what they said.
Right. All right, to Mr. Wink Wink, I mean, to Pastor Mike.
Yes, Phil, let me know when you make them filings back here in Miami Gardens and all kind of places that your baby that could use a young democratic socialist. No, listen, I think the challenge in this moment as black people is we've fallen out of love with our own children and our own community. And I think it's hard to really hold the line for what we deserve if you don't even love your own people. And I don't mean love like, you know, the sentimentality. I mean love is commitment. Mm-hmm. So I do hope that we remind ourselves that democracy and political engagement has to be a local enterprise just as much as a national one. I think we have to continue to remind ourselves that people learn about the efficacy or lack thereof of governance by the way your own city and your own borough and your own district is governed. If we can't get local elected officials to become imaginative about how to solve the material condition challenges of black people, and we can't get black folks who are in those positions to be curious and courageous enough to lean in around those kinds of radical solutions that are coming from some of the margins of our you know, movement spaces or faith spaces or young people or poor, lower resource communities, then politics becomes an exercise of the elite and a burden to the poor, right? And so I do believe we should figure out how do we fall back in love with one another to the point where we're going to fight for these kind of interventions that actually make sure people's lives are safe and they're cared for and they have food and they have housing and they have shelter. And I do believe if we can figure that out locally, we do create the pipeline that Phil is talking about. And that love is carried all the way through every level of governance. I think bad governance is de facto voter suppression. If people don't feel like it matters who governs at the local, city, state, county level, then of course you're not going to matter or you're not going to care about the federal level, right? And so we got to make sure we prioritize governance just as much as elections. Governance is a huge part of democracy. And I hope that we can figure out ways to hold people accountable in New York, in Miami, in Oakland, in Chicago, and every place in between.
And well, you know, when you talk about those issues that you outline, you might well say that, you know, Martin Luther King so loved his people that he gave his life at the end of his life, articulating an economic bill of rights. That, and this is one of the things that still baffles me that people don't really talk about. I mean, at the end of his life, King was, when he talked about that revolution of values in Oedipus that needs restructuring, he was saying, and this is like an interim step. The interim step is make sure that every human being in the society is in compliance with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And that is that every human being ought to have a job or income, a minimum, I mean, below a floor beneath which you cannot fall, quality education, housing, health care, all of those things as a basic human right. And he was killed before he could really, really completely flesh that out by way of the Poor People's Campaign, the Resurrection City that he would have been putting out in this, you know, in the middle to just shine a light on the glaring contradictions, you know, of capitalism. So a conversation well had. Brother Phil, how do people get in touch with Black Men Bill?
Go to www.blackmen.build, no.com, blackmen.build. And you can find us on Instagram, on Twitter, at Black Men Build. If you're in Miami, we're on 55th and 7th Avenue. If you go to the website, you'll find the information for all of our other chapters.
All right, Pastor Mike, the same thing. How do people get in touch with Live Free?
Look up Phil Agnew's billboard face in every city across the country. You can go to livefreeusa.org, livefreeusa.org. We're on Instagram and Twitter at livefreeusa. We love to rock with folks, you know. I think the work is ours to have and to do, and we have open invitation. Whosoever will, let them come.
All right. The doors of the movement are open. And so Pastor Mike is giving it, and it ain't a benediction. This is just the invocation. We do the benediction after the victory. All right. Thank you so much to both of y'all for sharing some time. And I've really, really enjoyed it. I think our audience will, too. We'll get some feedback shortly. Pastor Mike McBride, Executive Director of the Live Free Campaign and much more. And, of course, Phil Agnew, who is one of our great thought givers and organizers with the organization Black Men Build. Thank you so much for spending time with the professor here on Vantage Point.
Thank you.
To be here with you.
All right. Okay. Well, folks, you heard it here. Let's open up the phones now. Open up the phones. And we want to do two things. Number one, we want to just get your perspective on King's revolution of values. How far, how close, or what is our current situation in that regard? But I also want to specifically zero in on what Pastor Mike was talking about, as well as Phil Agnew, but particularly fast Pastor Mike. I mean, this is how he phrased it. We need to fall back in love with ourselves as a community. He talked about how to approach this issue of gun violence and the trauma that's been created and all those kinds of issues. We have a black mayor here in New York City that is a former police officer. 100 men and women, or 100, it wasn't men, I think men or women, or 100 in blacks in law enforcement who care, made his name, reputation, really fighting for reform and chastising the police and so forth. And so people see him as a good candidate to deal with this issue of gun violence and violence in our community. And of course, tragically, there was an officer who was killed in Harlem, another fighting for his life. And the mayor is out front, you know, and is being seen, you know, laying out prescriptions for how to deal with this issue of gun violence. So the whole question is, does Eric Adams have it right? And if not, what should we be asking him to do? What should we be asking? What should we be adding to the prescription? So go to your phones right now and join us in the conversation. The professor on the soapbox at 212-209-2877. Had about 15 minutes or so to get into the conversation. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877 to offer your perspective on King. And let me just thank everybody who did participate last week in our program. We had a very, very, very informative conversation, and you know, with Dr. Julianne Malvo and others last week, and people contributed, and we really appreciate that to the Tower Fund, because we can have these conversations without having them be like superficial. We can get deep, you know what I mean? We can really have a serious conversation without some like 30-second little like window. And so we appreciate people contributing to the fund. You can still do that by going you can go to the Tower Fund. I'm sorry, towerfund.wbai.org. You can still contribute to it. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Your perspective on King's revolutionary values, how close, how far, and the current state of the politics of this country, but more specifically, the issue of gun violence and trauma and murders and fratricide that is tearing at the hearts and souls of people as this stuff unfolds. It is so painful. What must be done? And is Eric Adams, our new mayor, does he have it right? 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. If you call right now, you have an open line. I mean, you won't have any problem getting in a minute. That may be a problem. But if you call right now, and by the way, you can call from anywhere in the country. Most people have free long-distance calling anyway. So, I mean, I get feedback from people from around the country. But, you know, if you want to call from anywhere in the country, you can do so, whether it's Washington, D.C., or from Los Angeles, or New Orleans, or Houston, Texas, or wherever. You can give us a call at 212-209-2877 in order to get into the conversation. Again, time is fleeing. We now have about 10 minutes for people to call in and give a quick comment or observation on the conversation that you've heard from two extraordinarily capable, brilliant, courageous, and visionary folks who are doing this work. Again, Pastor Michael McBride, Live Free Campaign, and of course, Philip Agnew, you know, who is working with an organization called Black Men Build. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, I was very impressed with the conversation that you had with the brothers, man. It brought tears to me because, you know, we don't hear that today. Like, some of the music that our young people are playing glorifies shooting and shooting up the community. Mm-hmm. And we should, as a community, come out against it. There was a DA up in Minnesota that came out against the rappers saying, you can't say these lyrics, we're going to take you to court. And some of the other guys, some of the big nine other guys come out and say, no, this is freedom of speech. We can say what we want to say. And there was no objection from the community. So, you know, you can't say that. And I would like to say that there was something that happened up in the Bronx where over 100 convictions were overturned by the DA, saying this narcotics policeman had falsified evidence just think how many lives were ruined. And they say it's more than that. They think over 500 cases can be overturned. And we wonder why Rikers Island is so full.
Right, that's the point that Pastor Mike was making about it's not always physical violence, it's mental violence. It is the misconduct. It is the, how can you trust the police when the police are like sending people to jail on fabricated charges? I mean, it's a very serious predicament indeed.
Appreciate your call.
Appreciate
that. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it so much. 212-209-2877. Others may call 212-209-2877. Your perspective on King's revolution of values, how close, how near, or how far. And, of course, the issue of gun violence and fratricide and murder and just violence in our community that is just on steroids in our community. And it is causing so much pain. And Eric Adams has declared that that it will be brought under control. But will he be able to bring it up under control? Or is he articulating the right methods and ideas? And is it a me, myself, and I proposition, or is it a we, us, and our proposition? Can he really do it by himself anyway? Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
All right, thanks. I appreciate you, and I'm enjoying the show. I got to say, Eric Adams, he's coming to a tough predicament. I mean, it's beginning of the year. There's already been 5 police officers that have been shot. I don't really know how easy it is going to be for him. It's going to be kind of tough. He's in a tough predicament when crime is soaring like this. But, you know, one thing I'd like to say is a good idea would be to bring back the undercover, you know, crime units that we had in the city a few years back. I mean, they were taking literally half the guns off of the street with less than 1,000 undercover police officers. I mean, that's one thing he can do. And also, I just feel like criminals have been emboldened over the last few years with the criminalization of crime. A lot of things that we used to take, you know, I'm not going to use broken windows terminology. And when we used to, you know, pretty much attack crime at a very low level, it seems like a lot of things that we're doing now, people are going in, coming right back out an hour later, and they're right back on the street.
So are you a proponent of this quality of life and broken windows theory?
I mean, it was working. I think it did a good job changing up the city over, you know, maybe 15 years ago. We had like a serious crime issue. And I mean, we might not appreciate the tactics in some instances. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of stop and frisk just because I think it violated people's rights. You know, but when things get to this point, when do you say that the safety of many is more important than some infractions of the rights of a few? It's very tough for me as well. I'm not sitting here trying to advocate for it.
All right, okay. I wanted to tease out your perspective. As executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, I had to deal with one of those undercover units. It was called the Street Crimes Unit. That was a unit that was charged with taking guns off the street. That's the unit that that killed Amadou Diallo. So there's some deep thinking I think we have to do about some of this in that regard. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Oh, hello, Dr. Daniels.
Yeah.
Hello.
Go right
ahead. Oh, hello. I know we've talked before, people have talked before about the Democrats being absolutely hopeless at selling their policies. They don't seem to know how to do it. And I know they have some kind of fund that they can use. They should be targeting, for example, West Virginia is one of the poorest states in the nation, I think. It's close to the bottom in terms of per capita income. And the people of West Virginia just lost their child care allowance. Now, they may not make the connection. I didn't make the connection right away. The Build Back Better bill, which their senator opposes so adamantly, would have kept them from losing their child care allowance. I don't think they realize that. Why don't the Democrats run ads nonstop, TV, radio, internet, and say something very simple to the people. We know how hard it is for you to get through the month now that your child care allowance has been stopped. Did mm-hmm. you know there's a bill in Washington that if it had passed would have kept your child care allowance going, but your Senator Joe Manchin votes against it, is against it. Call Joe Manchin, and then you give his phone number. Email your Senator Joe Manchin. Tell him you want your child care allowance back. Tell him to vote for the Build Back Better bill, period. Right. Can't they do
now,
that?
I want to help squeeze in another call. I actually agree with you. I've been doing some work and articulating some ideas out there along those lines. The one thing I would say, however, is that we also, I'm hoping that something can happen relatively quickly on the issue of the child care tax credit, as well as universal pre-K and some environmental issues. It may be a slimmed down version. The reason why I want to do that is because we focus so much and the public sees this squabbling going on. Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, they're not really the real enemies. I mean, they have a different perspective. I wish they would get on board, and I'm upset with them. But what about the fact that not one single Republican, not one, under the leadership of Mitch McConnell, the master obstructionist, has laid out this wall of opposition? So what I think is the messaging needs to be better, but we also need to say, who is it that supported minimum wage? Who is it that supported it, and who was against it? We need to draw that contrast. Let me go to my last caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. I think nothing has changed really, obviously, from Martin Luther King days. And I think he was trying to get at the, obviously there's a lot of people that live off of working people just by stocks. You're buying somebody else. They could say they're investing or they're risking money. You are working for somebody else before you're working for yourself. And that could be Jeff Bezos. It could be Bill Gates selling you masks and vaccines. It could be anything. So there's a working class that just lives off of other people. The rich people just live off of everybody. I think Martin Luther King is trying to bring that up. And none of that has changed. When you're not making it, nobody's making it, but somebody has $100 billion is making a billion every 30 seconds, and we're tolerating it. So, of course, you're going to kill somebody as soon as he speaks against that kind of wealth. Disparities, But it's obvious it doesn't work. It never has worked living off, there's always been that bourgeois class, and it's always crushed and, collapsed when the people realize, hey, we're doing all the work, we're not getting paid, and these people, the world's going to heck in a handbasket, and there's a handful of people getting rich, and then they're going to hide from whatever the consequences may be, or they're going to try to hide. But how are you going to hide? But the thing about the vaccines and everything and the masks are bad for the person that wears them. So that's a non-starter. It's been proven that the oxygen levels drop.
We're not going. Hey, look, I'm not going down that line. I'm sorry. I won't accept that. I'm not going down. I could hear that, some hints of that. We have programming on this station and others that, I'm not taking the theories of the 0.5% of people who claim to know what they're talking about this against the credibility of literally the 99% who are telling us, wear a mask and you'll be more safe. Pastor Mike is going to do some hand sanitizer and make some masks, and let's support people other than Beto's in doing it. But don't come with that anti-mask thing. To me, masking at a minimum is the minimum we can do, not only to protect ourselves, but protect others. So y'all can come get me. Y'all can string me up. But that's where I'm coming from. This is the Professor, Dr. Ron Danders. The show is Vantage Point. It's on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll see you again here next week. Time is truly wasted.